Welcome to Coffee with Kupke, a production of St. Paul Inside the Walls. Here on Coffee with Kupke, we grab a cup of coffee, at least we're claiming this is coffee. We sit with Monsignor Kupke, Raymond Kupke, the pastor of St. Anthony's in Hawthorne, professor at Immaculate Conception Seminary, diocesan archivist. We sit with Monsignor Kupke to delve into the history of Catholicism in the Diocese of Paterson. My name is Father Paul Manning. I am the vicar for evangelization for the Diocese of Paterson. And here I am with Monsignor Kupke. So grab your cup of coffee and let's jump right in. I'm going to take a sip. Welcome back.
Thank you.
How are you doing with coffee?
Coffee with Kupke is always full.
Yeah, I'm still good. Ninth cup today.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there were a few things I wanted to ask you about the polls.
Let me just say before we start, you know, if you read the parish histories of these places, you get a sense of the difficulty with the non-ethnic priests, you know. If you read a history of St. John's in Paterson, the cathedral, you know, they talk about how magnanimous Dean McNulty was in welcoming each of these groups and allowing them to use the Lady Chapel until they could get on their feet and build their own church.
Because that was atypical?
Well, if you read the parish histories of St. Michael's, St. Stephen's in Paterson, St. Anne's, you know, they will say in so many words, you know, that miserable Irish priest forced us to go into that ratty chapel because we didn't give enough money in the collection.
Oh, so we couldn't go in the big church.
We couldn't go into the big church, and we was forced until finally we just said, we've had enough of this, and we build our own church.
Okay.
So it's a much different take on the same.
Yeah. Now, how many parish histories have you read?
Oh, God.
A lot.
Yeah.
How many have you written?
One.
Which parish?
Pius and Montfort.
Okay. Yeah. You didn't write St. Peter's for the... No. Okay. So I have a name, Father Chlebowski.
Chlebowski, yes.
Yeah. So what's his deal?
He's really the first resident pastor for St. Joseph's in Passaic, you know, and St. Joseph's would be the original parish with the Polish community in Passaic and really in the diocese.
So. And he seems to have lasted a long time.
Yes, he did, you know, built a school, opened a school, built the current church.
Wow. How about
the old church is still standing. You know, most people don't realize it, but when you drive down to Passaic, you know, you can see the original church there to the right of the current one.
Okay. And that's used for what now?
A good question. I think they rent it out as
a hall or something.
A hall, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, St. Stephen's, was that a Polish parish originally?
St. Stephen's in Paterson, yes.
Yeah. So there were five pastors in 9 years, I read.
Yeah.
What was going on there?
Again, the stability of who's coming over, you know.
Okay, yeah.
They take a chance on somebody, or the other thing is that you have so few of them that you're moving them to bigger grounds very quickly.
Yes,
got it. The people like Chlebowski and Chanchi, who were stable, you know. I mean, the bishops burned incense in front of them because they provided stability. And you can see it in the way those parishes developed. You know, their stability in the parish gave the parish
a firm foundation. Yeah. So now we want to move to your folks.
The Slovaks.
Yeah. So just... how much of Slovak do you have in you?
Half.
Oh, wow.
Quarter. My mother's parents.
Okay. And did you know them?
Yes.
Yeah. So were they were immigrants?
They were immigrants.
These are your grandparents?
These are my grandparents.
And
it's interesting. you know, from a purely family perspective, our understanding of their daughters, you know, my mother and my aunts, you know, was that they met in the Slovak community on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, on this side of the ocean.
Yes.
So when my aunt and uncle and I finally get to Slovakia for the first time and meet dozens of relatives that we barely knew existed, because apparently my grandfather was the only one who ever left this town.
Oh.
Well, everybody else is still there.
Wow.
But, you know, we told them this, you know, understanding, and they looked at us and said, no, that's not what happened. They met over here in the village, and then she emigrated, and he chased her over there.
Oh.
And I can remember my aunt, you know, this is her parents that they're talking about. And she's just looking like, you know, where'd that come from?
Wow. So it was about your grandfather wooing your grandma.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember them speaking Slovak or?
Yes. As kids, you know, when they didn't want us to understand what was going on, they spoke Slovak.
And your mother?
Not really.
Probably understood.
No. My one aunt with whom my grandfather lived in his old age, she could handle it.
Yeah.
Like when we went over to Slovakia, you know, I was shocked that all of a sudden this all came back to her and she was suddenly speaking.
Wow.
You know, something I hadn't heard her say in years.
So forgive my ignorance of geography and history, but situate Slovakia for us at this point. And at some point, it's going to become Czechoslovakia.
Slovakia is the eastern half of what, between World War I and World War II, was Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
So you have three provinces of the old Austro-Hungarian Empire. You have Bohemia, where Prague is, Moravia in the middle, and then Slovakia all the way to the east. So they kind of get melded into a country, a hybrid country.
Yes.
You know, kind of the upscale urban Bohemians.
Yes.
And the rural country Slovaks.
Okay.
And they get thrown together. And finally, once, you know, the communism falls and the wall falls and everything, then they amicably split.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did your grandparents find a Slovak parish?
On the Lower East Side of Manhattan, yeah, okay. St. Cyril Methodius in Manhattan, which is still there and still functioning and still has Slovak Mass because there have been new immigrants, of course, since the, you know.
Now, why is it that we have two Cyril and Methodiuses in our diocese?
Because we have two Slovak parishes, one in Clifton and one in Booton. We actually have four that claim to be Slovak parishes.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me there were two more Cyril and Methodiuses that I didn't know about.
Okay. No, ultimately, it's interesting. The Italians and the Poles don't move into Morris County, but the Slovaks do.
Okay.
So the Slovaks have the only two ethnic parishes in Morris County, St. Cyril and Methodius in Booton and Sacred Heart in Rockaway.
Mm.
And then in the city, St. Mary's in Passaic and St. Cyril and Methodius in Clifton.
Yes. Okay. So it seems like St. Mary's in Passaic was one of the first?
St. Mary's in Passaic is the first,
yeah.
And endless trouble.
Oh, because?
This is a place, you know, if you thought five pastors in 9 years was bad, you know, they claim five pastors in the first 5 years.
Wow.
You know, and again, you know, one of them was arrested for practicing medicine without a license. One shot one of his parishioners. One ran off to the California Gold Rush. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And you sit back and you think about the bishop at the time saying, you know, what do I do next? Where do I go?
Well, so it's funny because, you know, in thinking about this chapter and realizing we would wrap it up at some point, I went to the footnotes again, and that's where I found out about Belja, practicing medicine, Father Belja.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Father I can't read my own writing, but it's a big, long name, who was the one who threatened someone with a revolver.
Right.
and was charging $5 for baptismal stipends.
Which in that time was a lot of money.
Outrageous. Wow. Yeah. So he got in trouble.
He got in trouble. So eventually, you know, they find somebody, O'Connor finds somebody who apparently was kind of miserable, you know, grumpy, difficult, but he was stable.
Was this Haytinger?
Yeah. So Haytinger remains.
Emory Haytinger.
And it's based on his personality more than anything else that there is then a split in St. Mary's and a Slovak National Catholic Church emerges, which ultimately will join the PNCC.
Okay, wow. So similar issues over land and ownership.
But almost more because of the Haytinger's routine would be to find in Europe a priest to be his assistant.
Mm.
You know, the best ones were the ones that could not speak English because then Haytinger could keep them under his control.
Yes.
You know, so he finds one. And the guy is much too popular.
Oh, boy.
You know, and there at the same time, you know, in Europe itself, particularly in Slovakia, there is all kinds of strife between the Hungarian government, which runs Slovakia at the time, and the Slovaks themselves.
Okay.
So at this point, we're talking about the first decade of the 20th century. You could not preach in Slovakia.
Wow.
You could not teach in Slovak in the school. You had to use Hungarian.
Oh, boy.
So there is a dichotomy between the clergy that go along with this.
Yes.
And are looked as... They call them Magyarons, you know, Hungarianizers.
Yeah.
Versus the simple clergy who are like practicing in Slovak. So he brings over one of these, and very quickly, this guy who cannot speak English is used by a faction of the parish that want to get Haytinger out.
Oh, boy.
And so a whole split.
It's
which
funny.
Continues today. The church is still there.
You know. It's funny, though. I always felt, and I said this to seminarians when I was vocation director, that one of the jobs of the parochial vicar is to make the pastor look good.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yes. But sometimes
you're... They accuse Haytinger of... appropriating the title von Haytinger, you know, kind of uppity. There was a whole raft of stuff going on, but it plays out on this side of the ocean.
Yeah,
the tensions that are going on over in the Eastern Europe at the time.
Yeah, you say Haytinger spoke six languages.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, it's a part of the world where everybody speaks several languages.
If you can
speak Slovak, you could probably also make yourself understood in Czech and in Polish. So a priest like that, he can be as grumpy as wants to be. You know, if he actually can function and cover all these bases, you know.
Yeah.
And Haytinger also gets involved in. Prompting Cyril Methodius in Bhutan and Sacred Heart in Rockaway as well.
You and I have talked about this, but and this is way off track. But my sense is that priests get a little more curmudgeonly and grumpy the older we get, because the more you've been in it, the more you've had to deal with. Good stuff and bad stuff and stuff that you gets harder to tolerate. Yeah. So my point.
You and I have, you know, towering respect for Kevin Flanagan.
Yeah.
But we both remember what he was like on Ash Wednesday.
That's true. Yeah. So Yeah, certain things he wouldn't put up with. He had just had enough.
Yeah.
Like the A&P Catholics got to him a little bit. Okay, so I hesitate to wade into this next section, and I'm going to ask you to simplify this for us. But we you have a section on the Eastern Rites, right? So we have are the Poles and the Slovaks, are they Eastern Rite?
If
some of them are,
if you go to the easternmost part of
Slovakia
today, you know, there are people in those villages who have been in three countries in their lifetime without having ever moved.
Yes.
You know, because after World War II, the Soviet Union detached the two easternmost counties of Czechoslovakia and annexed them to the Ukraine.
Oh.
So on top of everything else, you know, it's a very complex area. But yeah, we're talking about the Carpathian Mountains.
Okay.
At the farthest eastern borders of Slovakia, between Slovakia and Ukraine.
You can tell he sees the map in his head, can't you?
Yeah.
Like the geographical map.
So this is
I'm not seeing it.
This is the area that the Ruthenians come from. So this would be St. Michael's Cathedral in Passaic, Holy Wisdom in Sukasana.
Right.
All right. So they come from this part of the world.
So these are Catholics
of
who
the Byzantine Rite.
Right, who are celebrating the liturgy in their own language with their own traditions, but still are loyal to the Pope.
Right.
But
in this country, they get separated from the Ukrainian Byzantines, basically because the Ukrainians live on the north side of the Carpathian Mountains. The Ruthenians live on the south side, and they are different from the Ukrainians because the Ruthenians are one of a number of groups in Europe that have never been independent.
Okay.
They're kind of like the Laplanders and the Tyrolese and the Basques. You know, they have never actually had their own country.
Right.
But they're a separate ethnic group.
Yeah.
And they are different than their Byzantine brothers on the other side of the mountains, who are very, very much nationalistic, the Ukrainians.
Yes.
You know, and you see that today. So when they come over to this country, Rome divides them in this country. Because
from the Ukrainians.
From the Ukrainians.
Wow. So, and so suddenly they have their own identity? Or
they have their own identity, right.
And so they kind of thrive, yes?
Pardon?
Do they thrive, the Ruthenians?
They do. And you can see the difference between the two groups even today, even though they have the same liturgy. It's a different language. But the Ruthenians are much more American, in a word,
you know,
because they don't have the nationalistic Ukrainian thing going on. So they're not as concerned about preserving Ukrainian language and all of that. You know, like they will just – they even now they have begun to refer to themselves as the American Byzantine Church.
Oh, interesting. You know? Wow. So
the only in Catholicism, there are 15 – Eastern churches that are semi-independent, you know, self-governing.
Yes.
Of the 15, 14 of them are either in the Middle East or Eastern Europe.
Yes.
And then there's the Archbishop of Pittsburgh.
Yes.
The Ruthenians. Who is a sui juris, head of a church.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the Ruthenians. Yeah.
So I was aware of the, is it the cathedral in Passaic?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
St. Michael's.
Right. And then saw in your book that there is Holy Wisdom in Sukasana. In our part of – I come from there. We would say it's Flanders, but yeah.
They go back and forth.
Yeah. But and it's kind of tucked away, that church. I don't know that I ever saw it.
Yeah.
And it's right near where I grew up. So I'm going to take a ride out there and take a look at it.
Well, oddly enough, for your purposes – there is a third one right around the corner from where you once lived.
Ruthenian?
Yes. St. Peter and Paul in Rockaway.
Yes. So I knew the actually the pastor there.
Right.
Yeah.
So in the 1920s, there's a big split in the American Byzantine community.
Okay.
Over the issues of married priesthood and what they consider to be the imposition of Western practice on their right.
Yes.
Coupled with that, there is an intense proselytization movement from the Russian Orthodox.
I have that note there. Yeah.
So if you stand in Passaic, right down the street from St. Michael's Byzantine Catholic Cathedral is St. Peter and Paul Russian Orthodox Cathedral, which was once a Catholic parish.
Okay, so the same thing happened in Rockaway?
In Rockaway, St. Peter and Paul.
Became affiliated with the Orthodox.
Yes, but they did not go with the Russians. They went and became independent. So the American Carpatho-Russian Orthodox Greek Catholic Church is much like the Polish National Catholic Church. It's a schismatic group that emerges on this side of the ocean because of the perceived oppression by the Romans.
Yes, so are we feeling a little bit guilty about Jesus's prayer that they all may be one?
Yeah.
We're not doing so
well. We have some work to do at home.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah, it's very complicated. So
I remember, there are funny sides to this because many of these took place 75, 80 years ago. So, much of the sting of them has disappeared. I remember when John Paul II was elected, one of the Polish national priests said to me, he said, were we that big a problem for you that you had to go and do this, select the Polish Pope?
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
So, and even in Passaic, Passaic, the religious history of the city of Passaic could be on Netflix. It could be a series all by itself.
That might be the ins, our next project.
The ins and outs. Yes. We haven't even covered the Italian ethnic independent church in Passaic.
Oh, no.
St. Anthony's.
But we're not going to go there now because we've run out of time.
But today, many of these groups, they switch back and forth depending on who they marry. It's a interesting hodgepodge. Before we depart, I would just say, I don't know if you went, but this past spring or summer, I guess, when Father Chris Tisco was ordained, if you went to his first Mass at Holy Rosary in Passaic, you saw the explosion of ethnic customs at his first Mass.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
That would give you a hint of what this was like, 80, 90 years ago.
Okay. Let's leave it there. I want all of you who are listening or watching to make sure that you keep an eye out or an ear out for the next episode of Coffee with Kupke. In order to stay on top of new releases, make sure you follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you are on YouTube, please do drop a like and hit the bell for notifications. While you're at it, make sure to check out the other shows produced by the diocese. Those shows are Beyond the Beacon, hosted by Bishop Kevin Sweeney and Jay Agnish, our Director of Communications, and the Paul Street Journal, hosted by Brian Hansberger and Freddie Garcia. I want to give a special thanks to Joe Genexi, our sound and visual engineer, Caitlin Ferrari, who's involved in pre and post production, and Freddie Garcia, who's helping out with this podcast in addition to doing his own. With all that said, I just want to thank you for joining us in Coffee with Kupke. Keep making Catholic history in the Diocese of Paterson.